Sex, spies, intrigue, and deception. If today's Old Testament reading isn't a real Christmas cracker, I don't know what is. It comes as something of a surprise to read the story of Rahab the prostitute. There are so many aspects of the story that we might not expect. It begins with the Israelites on the threshold of entering the Promised Land. And before embarking on this great venture, Joshua sends over two spies to check out the land. Whether it was in their brief to pay a visit to a brothel in Jericho, we're not told. But that is the somewhat surprising location for the story which unfolds. News that Israelite spies are staying with Rahab leaks out to the king of Jericho. And Rahab is ordered to deliver the spies, orders Rahab to deliver the spies up. But she outwits the king and hides them up on her roof. And she then deceives the king's men and sends them off on a wild goose chase, claiming that the spies have already left the city. Having deceived the king's men, Rahab then strikes a clever bargain with Joshua's spies. She has protected them, and now she asks for protection for her and her family from the imminent invasion of Jericho by the Israelites. And the spies strike their deal with Rahab, saying, "Our life for yours." And with a splash of colour in a story which is anything but dull, they tell Rahab to hang the crimson cord from her brothel window. And that way the Israelites will know to spare Rahab and her household when the city is attacked. The spies depart, they return to Jericho, to Joshua, and they tell him that the inhabitants of Jericho are living in fear. The Lord has indeed given the land over to the Israelites. It's a great story. Not only are there numerous twists and turns in the narrative, but there is also the very human dimension of the character and ingenuity of Rahab. We don't expect a woman who sells sexual favours for a living to be the heroine of a biblical story. It's not the narrative that we're used to. And here is a woman who lives on the messy margins of city life. And yet she outwits the established authority figure of the King of Jericho. And she also has the quick-wittedness to strike a life-saving bargain with Joshua's men. It's a story full of the unexpected. But if we read our Bibles carefully, we can, particularly with the Christmas story, we wouldn't be surprised by some of the twists and turns that we see. Because Rahab's story points to a Christmas story which also challenges our expectations at every turn. An unmarried young woman is to be the mother of Jesus. The first people God chooses to hear about this news are the shepherds. They, like Rahab, are on the margins of their society. The gospel action takes place in a messy stable in Bethlehem, whilst in this story, it's a brothel, literally built between the inner and outer city walls. God is indeed a God of surprises. Rahab's story should make us reevaluate and question how we view people on the margins. In London today, how do we feel when we're on a train or a tube and a beggar gets onto our carriage and begins one of those melancholy stories about what's happened in his life and how much he is in need or she is in need? What do we think about the increasing number of women sex workers who sell their bodies in order to put bread on the table, to have money to pay rent, to fund their studies, and frequently, sadly, to fund a drug habit? The reaction of some Christians in Luton to the growing issue of sex workers in that town was to set up a charitable project called Azalea. It's an outreach and a drop-in centre in town, a safe haven for those women to go to. The name Azalea was chosen because it is a flower which is associated with dignity. And in Proverbs 31, it speaks of a woman clothed with dignity and strength. She can laugh at the days to come. There's a certain dignity in the way that Rahab conducts herself in this story. Against all the odds, her smartness gave her and her family the opportunity to laugh at the days to come. Whilst Rahab is a person on the margins of society, she understood and recognised the ways of God. In her exchanges with Joshua's men, she acknowledges the amazing things that God has done, from Moses' parting of the Red Sea to the Israelites conquering the Amorite kings of Og and Sihon. The people of Jericho are left in fear and dread of what will happen to them. And in verse 11, Rahab concludes, "The Lord your God is indeed God in heaven above and on the earth below." We can see similar examples in the Gospels of the marginalized who saw that there was something special and significant about Jesus. There's Legion, the Gerasene demoniac who called Jesus Son of the Most High God. The unclean woman who had suffered from bleeding for 12 years, who instinctively knew that she only had to touch the hem of Jesus' cloak to receive healing. The Gentile woman who had the nerve to beg Jesus to heal her daughter. The criminal crucified with Jesus on the cross, who knew and acknowledged him to be innocent and righteous. All could see something of who Jesus was, just as Rahab understood the majesty of the Israelites' God. What is it that enables the marginalized and society's rejects to acknowledge God more readily than the rich and the powerful? Well, one reason is that people on the fringes tend not to be so affected by the pride or sense of self-importance which can blind those who have seemingly achieved so much more in life. They do not have the possessions or the status which can be such a distraction to seeing and knowing Jesus for who he is. The story of Rahab also speaks to us today at a wider, more political level. It's a story which causes us to think about ownership of land and the rights of people who live in Israel and Palestine. The purpose of the spy mission, after all, was to help the Israelites to enter Canaan, the land that had been promised to their forefathers, going back to Abraham in that genealogy. And Rahab was part of this story, helping them to achieve the job for which the spies had been sent, keeping them safe from Jericho's authorities. And so in the stories in the chapters that follow, we see the story of how the Israelites invaded and conquered the land that had been promised to them by God. But that conquering of the land and the disposition of the Canaanites and many other tribes who live there raises its own questions. There are questions about who has the right to live in the land, and questions that have continued to be played out over the centuries that followed. Most particularly in the last century, we have seen this balancing of the struggle for the homeland for the Jews and the rights of the Palestinians to live alongside a Jewish state. It has dominated the politics of the Middle East. For those of us who last month went on the pilgrimage to Israel, we travelled through the occupied West Bank to Jericho, and we saw places where Palestinians live with Jewish settlements growing up around them. We saw something of the restrictions on the Palestinians living there, unable to move freely into Israel. Their rights in the occupied territories often precarious and under threat. Our guide on that trip, Bashan, was a Palestinian Christian, and he was forever cautious about where he could take us. On our last day, as we went to Tel Aviv Airport, he explained how he might well be stopped and challenged by the police. If that happened, we were to continue on without him. We were not to look back or be concerned about him if he was being questioned. It was a salutary reminder of how the freedoms we take for granted in this country, at least if we're white and middle class and male, they're not freedoms that everyone enjoys. And a number of you here this morning will be aware in your own countries of origin or your countries of heritage of restrictions that exist on the freedom of movement, and where people, particularly those who are outside of the ruling established party, can live. So Rahab's story is important as it explains why, after the conquest of Canaan by Joshua, not every non-Jew was displaced. Jews and Gentiles got to live alongside one another. As Joshua's army prepared to overrun Jericho, we read in chapter 6 of how the spies went back into the city and brought out Rahab, her parents and her siblings, and all her family. After Jericho is destroyed, the story concludes like this. But Rahab the prostitute, with her family and all who belonged to her, Joshua spared. Her family has lived in Israel ever since, for she hid the messengers who went to spy out Jericho. That picture of people from different backgrounds and beliefs living alongside one another was the story in Jesus' day too. The Jews lived alongside the Gentiles and the Romans in Palestine, not always easily. Fast forward 2,000 years, and we witnessed on our pilgrimage in Jerusalem the amazing convergence of people from the three great Abrahamic faiths of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, living in Jerusalem in a mix of peace, of toleration, and of tension. Rahab's story reminds us of our call, wherever we live in God's world, to live in peace with our neighbour, not to judge them or exclude them because they're different from us in their culture, in their beliefs, in their way of life, in the things that they do. In that way, Rahab points us to Jesus, who exemplified taking an interest in caring for those and the lives of others, particularly the marginalized and the excluded. Jesus repeatedly demonstrated a willingness to be involved in and part of their stories. And so in following Jesus, we can see how other people's stories can enrich and help to explain our own story. We can learn to see how each person, whatever their circumstances, even the prostitute, is valued by God. And as we do this, we too can acknowledge, as Rahab did, that the Lord our God is indeed God in heaven above and on the earth below. Amen.